Doug Green, and I'm the publisher of Telecom Reseller. And today I'm very pleased to have with us Dr. Paul Carter, who's the CEO and co-founder of Global Wireless Solutions. Paul, thank you for joining me today.
You're welcome, Richard. Nice to meet you.
Well, we're going to be talking about one of our favorite topics here. We're going to be talking about 5G. We're going to be talking about mobility, but we're going to be talking about much more than that. We're going to be talking about how 5G really might transform almost everything, the way we do, the way we work, the way we recreate, the way we live, even maybe where we live, and how transformative this moment might be. So, Paul, we're going to get into all that in just a minute, but could you tell us really briefly, what is Global Wireless Solutions?
Sure. Well, GWS is a leading mobile insight consulting firm. We basically founded it 26 years ago now. We've been providing our services in about 25 countries, something like that. Our heritage really has been in wireless network performance measurement. So doing so, we've collected about 15 million miles of data across the US and many other countries, comparing the performance of the different commercial wireless networks. To do this, we typically have used, you know, expensive, sophisticated test equipment located in test vans, and we've been driving around collecting, again, the voice and data networks. But we've recently, or a couple of 3 years ago, extended this capability now into not just having dedicated drive testing, but also to have an app on a consumer panel, essentially, where we're collecting data through an app. We're taking data off about 200,000 unique adult opt-in panelists through their smartphones in the US. Gives us about 50 million data points today. And so we can use this data basically to not just understand their network performance, how their experience is with the wireless networks, but also to understand what their behavior is with their phone in terms of which apps they use, how often they use them, how many minutes of use they do per day. And we can also ask them surveys to get their sentiment about different aspects of their performance and their use. So we're very much involved in, providing mobile network insights.
So, you know, what caught my attention to do this podcast is a headline flashed across my desk saying that you guys saw a tipping point with more than half of the U.S. consumers accessing 5G networks. So what do we mean? We hear the term tipping point all the time, but what do we really mean by that, and why do you see this as a tipping point?
Well, you're right that we do, and this is something that is, I think, pretty recent. If you look back at when 5G was introduced in the US, it was towards the end of the second half of 2019, and back in those days the future looked bright, and then early 2020 hit and COVID arrived, and all of our worlds were just sort of turned upside down. And actually, interestingly, some people linked 5G to COVID. People felt, some conspiracy theorists believed that 5G was causing COVID. Some people were trying to burn down 5G cell sites, and it was a pretty scary and strange time. But, while we were surviving lockdowns, the networks were building out the 5G, and sort of here we are now, a couple of years later, 2022, latter part of 2022. And we've performed surveys and looking at our panel data as well. And indeed, the good news does appear that we've reached this tipping point. What that means is there are a number of different points to reach that tipping point. Number one is from a 5G coverage perspective, the people that we polled are seeing the 5G coverage in urban areas reaching 83% this year, which is pretty obviously impressive. But I think even more staggering is if you look at suburban 5G coverage in suburban areas, that's up from just 39% in 2020 to 76% this year, which is basically a 98% growth rate. And rural areas are up from just 29% in 2020 to 65% right now, so which is 124% growth rate. So basically, where people are seeing 5G, it's each of those have reached over above 50% the tipping point. But additionally, 61% of our survey respondents told us they've actually accessed 5G this year, versus that was 40% in 2020. And in addition, in terms of customer sentiment, 76% of them, of all our poll, all of the people we polled, were either excited or very excited about 5G, which is up 66% from 2020. So from the surveys, 5G is here. And in addition, looking at our panelists, these 200,000 or so panelists that we have our app on, if you look at mid-2022 findings on the panel, about 50% of the panelists have 5G-enabled devices, which is up from almost nothing at the beginning of 2020, almost 0%. And in terms of also just a quick note on performance, we're seeing throughputs on the panel doubling in just the last 2 years. The speed throughputs have doubled. And it's funny enough, if you go back and look at some of our data, not from the panel, but from our drive data from a decade ago, believe it or not, a decade ago, just 10 years ago, we were touting single digit megabit per second throughputs across the US as a big thing. And now we're seeing 20-fold increase over that time frame. So you know, it's 5G is here, and we believe it's reached its tipping point.
You know, that's interesting because, you know, in the past, I mean, anybody who's had a cell phone or mobile device over the last 10 or 20 years, I think the different formats of how that device was delivered, how the technology was delivered by the carrier, I'm guessing the average consumer just knew that the phone was on and he had a signal, and really wasn't paying much attention to how it was being done.
Yes. I mean, to some degree, right? We didn't call it 1G, but the first cell phone were 1G, and then we know we went to 2G when it was basically digital. And then 3G came along, and, well, 2G had some little bit of data, but 3G was sort of broadband data speeds, and so we started to use our phones for, you know, internet searching and things like that. 4G came along, and then again, to some degree, I think it's been a little bit like, that things have heated up, and we haven't really noticed the things heating up until, yeah, with 4G, with faster throughputs, with more apps on the phone, we're now using the phone all the time. And so I think the promise of 5G is it's being promoted in a much heavier way by the network operators, but it's promising to reach into more of our lives than ever before. And so I think people, you know, have a true understanding of what experience they've currently had and how their life has changed over the last few years. But I think they're now even more optimistic about where this will go and how 5G can deliver even more to them.
Yeah. So in other words, there's more awareness that the consumer has about what he's using, and it's actually becoming a brand. I guess what I was arguing before is I don't know whether 3G was a brand for most people.
Yeah, no, I think it is. I mean, the fact that, to me, the fact that we've seen a 50% take up in our panel in just 2 or 3 years, to 5G-enabled devices. And interestingly enough, when we look at the behavior from the panelists on those devices, basically the average amount of time the panelists are spending on their phone a day is 312 minutes a day, which is over 5 hours a day. Or if you're up for 15 hours a day, you know, that's basically a third of your waking day you're on your phone. And that's the 5G-enabled devices. If you look at our panelists that don't have 5G-enabled devices, basically they use their phone 37 minutes less a day than the ones with 5G-enabled. If you roll that up across the year, that's 9 full days within the year that the 5G-enabled device panelists are on their phone more than the others. So I do think you're right. I think it's become our lives remote control, and we use it from everything from social media, video streaming, video sharing, messaging, gaming, gambling. I mean, for example, we look using the panel data and gambling as another example, sportsbook betting. We saw massive uptake on that in the last couple of years. And instantly, we're now seeing women growing at a faster rate on sportsbook betting than men. In terms of rate, there's still more men betting, but the rate of women is growing faster. So, you know, the sportsbook betting also comes with changes of regulations and laws across the country in different states. So it's a combination of a technology with law changes, right? But yes, I think people, to your point, do understand the value of the brand of 5G.
You know, I remember when Steve Jobs rolled out the iPhone, it was actually marketed as now you can look at the whole internet on your phone instead of the little mobile-ready websites. I don't even know if Jobs anticipated that we would be using it to board airplanes, to tell the government, yeah, I had a COVID test, to apply for a job, maybe even to apply for a home loan, right? So to your point, you know, is 5G to the network what iPhone was to devices?
That's a really good question. I mean, to your point about the iPhone, I mean, it was 15 years ago that the iPhone was launched, and it was launched, yes, with an internet capability, but still it was on 2G access technology, even though
right.
3G was the technology of choice at the time. And, you know, it had a game-changing UX, and that, you know, for everybody using the phone, it was so nice to use it. But I think really the big game changer for the iPhone was it launched a framework for delivering apps directly to your phone from the device manufacturer, as opposed to the wireless operator, which then made people develop apps at a ridiculous rate. And now there are millions of apps that you can get through the App Store every day to impact every aspect of your life, whether it's working or playing or whatever you want to do. I mean, so to your point, I mean, now we communicate with friends directly through social media, or we communicate with the world. We hail rides, we order food, we watch videos on demand, we listen to music on demand. We even attend weddings remotely through in foreign lands with our phones, all from the palm of the hand. And that was never even conceivable 15 years ago. And I absolutely agree with you. I do think that in a similar way, 5G is introducing a whole new framework for network architecture. So there's always a media or a focus, if you like, on what's it going to do for me? And it's always boiled down, I think, to speed, latency, and basic things like that. But it's so much more for so many more reasons. But in addition to the speed and latency, yes, it'll bring that. It'll also provide, I think, much broader coverage, which we're already seeing 5G rolled out at a faster rate than we were seeing in urban and suburban and rural areas than we saw for previous technologies. But it'll also bring capacity where needed. You know, wireless networks are always struggling with capacity where they're needed. And reliability, you know, the number one reason that people still choose network operators is based on reliability. Reliability is still key always. But in addition to that, it's going to stimulate so many new areas like private networks, you know, on campuses, on factories, airports, hospitals, beyond. Telehealth will become even more important through 5G. Connected cars, autonomous cars, smart cities, IoT. The list just goes on and on. And to some degree, that future is here now. And to some degree, the future is still to come. But it's all about the architecture and this new framework for how it's delivered to you, not just the air interface. And so I do think it's the question is the iPhone and R5G revolutionary or evolutionary? And I think, you know, to some degree, we could argue both. But, I think in many ways, they're both revolutionary.
You know, Paul, I'm glad you brought that up because you're now talking to our readers, and you know, most of our publications readership deal with these issues as a work issue, as you know, how am I going to use this technology to deliver voice and real-time communications to the workforce that I have, to allow our company to communicate with the outside world, to operate a contact center, and so on. And we're hearing a lot about how 5G might transform not only all that, but even things to your point, things such as like industrial processes, the way cities do policing or fire or deliver other mm-hmm. vital services. So, you know, in thinking, I mean, yeah, so these are very imaginative and exciting things, But, you know, for our readers who maybe are working at a rural telephone company or Native American phone company or running an MSP channel partner or at an enterprise, what are the practical things that they might be wanting to think about as we get into a 5G era?
Well, again, I mean, to be honest, it's going to impact and affect every part of our life. I mean, just thinking about the amount of money that's already been spent on these wireless networks. So what US operators have spent $100 billion or more just purchasing spectrum. And they're going to need to deploy that spectrum. And if you look at CapEx this year alone, the US operators are supposed to spend about $42 billion on CapEx deploying 5G. If you look at the height of 4G at the peak, that was $25 billion. So there's so much money going into these networks, and that's all going to come out the other end for either consumers or for businesses. Private networks and what they can deliver, again, on all the different types of places. Work processes, or as a consumer going through an airport, or tracking your bags going through an airport, or just communicating with your work, your colleagues, and sending data in a way that was never achievable before, because of basics. Sometimes you will have basic coverage that you didn't have before, or a significant enough capacity or reliability that just wasn't really there before. All of this money is being spent to deliver basic services, but again, all the more complicated ones, like again, the smart cities. I mean, you think about it, every traffic light, autonomous cars are supposed to be buzzing around. Well, they need to communicate with each other, and they need to communicate with things like traffic lights. They need to be told the traffic light's going to change soon. I mean, right now, you pull up to a traffic light, you don't know when it's going to change. You just sit there, and if you can see the pedestrian crossing tick down, but that's about it. So all of this needs to get integrated together, and it's all about building a framework of delivering capabilities, network slicing, edge computing, delivering capabilities closer to where you need them in terms of data housing and data processing. It's just honestly so much to talk about, and it'll all take time. I mean, again, we are, 3 years, let's say, into the 5G process. Typically, a wireless network, these generations take 8 to 10 years. We haven't even really got a standalone 5G network yet. We're still talking really about most of the 5G we're talking about is built on top of 4G today. Standalone is just beginning to be deployed. Standalone, of course, is, end to end with 5G core, which gives you, this faster latency. So again, if you're doing anything in the work environment that needs like almost zero latency, whether it's whether you're sort of operating some sort of robot underwater to do maintenance or whatever it is that you need both this throughput speed and the latency, you can get it now. People, again, from either consumers or business, whether it's again in telehealth, I mean, there are two sides to telehealth, both consumers and business side to that as well. People are looking for, but some, one of the surveys people came back, that was the number two most thing that people were excited about for 5G was faster remote diagnosis for telehealth. But, another area for businesses that our panelists were most interested in, the number one thing they're most interested in was virtual reality video calls, which is really funny because if you go back to the beginning of 2020, we did a business survey in the UK asking business leaders what communications areas mattered most to them, whether it be voice, email, texting, video calling, and so on. Bottom of the list was video calling. Nobody cared about video calling at the beginning of 2020. Now, 3 months from that point, Zoom, Teams, everything became the primary mean of communication, and now here we are. Yes, we want to maintain this remote working capability, and so 5G can deliver that to us across the community. Again, through to network, better network architecture, more cells, more small cells deployed easier. It's just, the options are limitless almost. And then, of course, just when we finally get used to 5G, we'll be talking 6G, and, you know, with even more unimaginable things happening.
You know, Paul, as you're talking, I'm thinking that I think since medieval times, you could get a water taxi on the Thames River. There was a taxi service in London. There was a, you know, taxi service in every part of the world. And all of this was shattered with the iPhone, right? The advent of smartphones and also the accompanying technology made way for an over-the-top service called Uber and Lyft and a whole bunch of other people who came along and blew up something that had existed for hundreds of years almost. So is that the level of society transformation we're looking at, you think, with 5G? Yes.
I think so, because also, because once you build the architecture to deliver all these different services, then, you know, it literally will take everybody else to build their piece of the puzzle. Obviously, you know, the whole car industry is working on its pieces of delivering the autonomous cars, but they need communication. Again, the telehealth, they're, you know, people are working their piece, but they need the communication. And so it's like it all needs to come together in order to deliver everything. But then the apps on top of that, like you said, the over the air sort of app piece of it, or the on top of the service, people will continue to come up with creative ways of delivering different capabilities and features and services to us. It's all happening, and everybody's going to be involved in it. And that is the thing too, I think. We all benefit from the communications and improved communications, and we all leverage it. And we all understand very quickly how to use a new app like Uber or Uber Eats or Deliveroo or whatever the new app is that we live by. They're pretty easy to integrate into our lives, and they just become additive. And, you know, that don't stop us from going to the store. We choose different things when it suits us, and we can now have the choice to be in control of our lives and to use our smartphone as the device to control our lives. And I just think it's obviously going to be more and more important in the future.
Yeah, Paul, this has been a really interesting conversation. And as we wrap up our podcast today, and as we apparently cross that tipping point, do you have any advice for our readers? You know, our readers are mostly B2B, but, you know, the consumer market ultimately is where everything actually happens. It's where the big plays are occurring. So how do you see all this play out, at least in the near term, in 2023?
Oh, well, you know, as I was sort of describing earlier a little bit, we use our phones for everything these days. And so dependent on our income situation and our employment situation and you know, inflation, we've been over COVID, we've tracked ride shares go down and delivery services go up, and then come back out of COVID, you see reverses of these things, and then you see, you know, this recent tough economy and people using less of delivery services and so on. Obviously seen a massive increase over time in recent years in streaming video or video services in one form or fashion, whether it's a social media video, TikTok, or if it's a streaming video from a Netflix type service or any so many different types of video. That video is here to stay, and video is, like, I think one of the big areas of focus. The question is, who's going to pay for it? And there are just more and more sources of video, and the content hasn't increased as much as the number of availability of sources. So what sort of business model will survive? That's always an interesting one. Gambling, you know, again, I think I mentioned earlier with the law changes in a number of states, the pickup in gambling in the US, or sportsbook gambling, particularly around the NFL season, that's been pretty amazing in growth in recent last couple of years in particular. Men and women, again, men dominate it. We look at everything on a demographic basis. So we look at age and gender and income. So it's really interesting to see which areas are growing and which are dipping, or which demographics, I should say. Gaming's another big one. I think there's a million gaming apps on the iStore, Apple Store these days. So a lot of people are spending time gaming. But again, across all the different use cases or market segments, from social media to communications or browser searching or messaging, just different types of regular tools, lifestyle, just so many. We looked at finance, it's another interesting one. We saw quite a bit of finance growth, particularly during COVID, with apps that people, like obviously things like Robinhood that people hadn't historically used. In terms of minutes of use, they're not dramatic compared to the real-time consumers like the social or the video, but we did see a lot of growth in finance. And I think obviously with the economic situation, I think we'll obviously see more people focused on in the areas of finance as well. So it's just so much to look into, to be honest.
Well, there's a huge takeaway that 5G in enabling video sort of starts to set the stage for more video enabled things, and maybe that's a good way to think about the future as people think about how do I plan for 2023 and beyond.
Yeah, I mean I do think video is just so important for everything we do, and you know, just walking around the streets, you see people FaceTiming these days. You know, people used to be concerned about their data plans or whatever it is, but now, you know, with unlimited plans that people have, and going in and out of Wi-Fi as well, it's like people are on video one form or fashion. A lot, and so we like to see each other and we like to connect with each other. And I think, you know, one thing again we learned very much from COVID is that people want to stay connected with each other, and we'll find a way to do that. And voice is the first thing, talking to somebody, but seeing them is even more important, and you know, then getting back together with them again after the COVID was done. But throughout all of this, the number of minutes of use just increases on your phone, whether you're at home on your own, whether you're at work, whether you're, you know, out and about, the minutes of use goes up year after year after year. And I suspect it will continue to do so.
Well, I really want to thank you for joining me today. This has been a very interesting conversation. I love it when we get a chance to, you know, understand better what's happening around us and kind of look into the future and start to think about that. I want to find out, where can I learn more about Global Wireless Solutions, and where can I learn more about some of the statistical information you discussed in this conversation?
Yeah, thanks. Appreciate that. Really appreciate your conversation too today. But thanks. Our website is just gwsolutions.com, gwsolutions.com.
Well, Paul, thank you very much indeed for joining us today. I am looking forward to our next podcast, see how this stuff actually rolled out in the new year, and see what your thinking is then. But for now, thanks very much.
Thank you. You're welcome.